start with just attack or other moves in play to settle down first. It will be a good photograph of him walking with a cup in hand and for the media. But good morning, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen, the acting CEO of Central Energy Fund and the staff that are members that is accompanying her from the CEF group of companies. Members, as you know, we haven't, I think it's the second time or third time in our history here, so 2009, that we are engaging Central Energy Fund. And we thought that it's very necessary in the committee to engage with the Central Energy Fund. As you know, Parliament consists of two houses, National Assembly and National Council of Provinces, and we thought as one of the houses of Parliament that we should engage the Central Energy Fund to come and tell us what they are doing. We just read about them in the newspaper, and we just heard announcements being made by them, but just to come and tell us what they are doing, what are they up to? Are they up to good things, or up to, as people normally say, no good things, or are they spending the money wisely? Can they look after South Africa's energy? The companies that they control, or Petrosa and those companies, are they looking well after the resources of South Africa? And that's why we want to thank you, CEO, for honoring the invitation. I know that you had a busy program, but thank you for taking the time off your busy schedule to attend this meeting. We really appreciate that. Also to your board members. We'll start with our introduction. I think that I see that you have visited us so that the visitation didn't happen so frequently as it was supposed to happen. I think you forgot some of the faces and some of the names and all that. Honorable Sinclair has gone a bit younger. Don't know if it's of the Botox or anything. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm representative of the Western Cape, also the chairperson of the Committee for Economic Development, which consists energy, mineral resources, and economic development. Let's start from my left.
My name is Pure
Dinizo. Utumsan Kamate from KwaZulu Natal.
Morning, Chair. Kenneth Sinclair from the Northern Cape.
Good morning, Masoko Dikhale from Limpopo Province. Good morning, Bev Abrams from Gauteng.
Morning, Joe Monyambi from Mpumalanga Province.
Good morning, Abdullah Hanif, Committee Researcher.
Morning, Yoli Zwalando, Parliamentary Communication Services.
From the SABC.
Madam Tilene from Committee Section.
So I'm to your Committee Section.
Andre Yadon from SABC Radio.
Elias Pariska from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Chairperson, good morning, honorable members. My name is Busima Buza, I'm a director and acting CEO at the CEF.
Good morning, members. I'm Chris Cooper. I'm the corporate planner at CEF.
Morning, members. My name is Mandra Jala, working in communications at CEF.
Thank you very much. Now we know who's everybody. You see, we've got the famous people in our room like Asanda. We only heard on the radios and on TV. This has been filed by Asanda, but now we see who's Asanda. So it's good to have such famous people within our midst. Welcome, everybody. And CEF plays a central and a key integral role and part in government's future, in government's plan, in South Africa's future in terms of energy. I know about the subsidiaries that's under CEF, Apatosas and Samaris and all those people. CEF is also busy with the finalizing of the merger between IGAS and Petrosa. They're also busy with the solar park, overseeing that, see that that gets up and running. And as we represent provinces, as you could hear, that everyone comes from the different provinces, we would also like to find out what is happening in the provinces. We would also like to find out how the projects are going. But acting CEO, without much ado, the floor is yours.
And honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity to once again come and present ourselves in front of you. We always appreciate the opportunity to get ideas and inputs from your side on the programs that we are looking at. Chair, we will start by going through the organization as was and as is, Chair, recognizing that a number of you will know of our history and our background, but we believe that it is important, especially at this point of transition and transformation, to just sketch the background of the group to yourselves. And I'll try and be brief in doing that and rather allow for questions. We'll then, Chair, go to our objectives and our budget going forward, and then I'll allow Dr. Cooper to take over and talk about the specific activities that we have as a group around the country. Chair, this is where we come from. I think when we last presented to you, this is the slide that we probably presented to yourself. If I may start on my right-hand side, SASDA is the South African Supplier Development Agency, which was born out of the Liquid Fuels Charter with the aim of developing suppliers to the petroleum industry. We, as SAF, had to then take over those activities because of the funding challenges of that agency. That remains, Chair, as a subsidiary of SAF. It has, in the meantime, developed into a business that does both BE verification and supplier development. However, the SAF board chairperson has requested that the group must revert back to our energy mandate and therefore focus on the supplier development side of the business. So we used to, when we last spoke to you, administer quite a number of funds and projects in conjunction with the Department of Energy. And a number of these projects have already been concluded and closed. We continue, Chair, from our Treasury Division to manage a number of funds, the Equalization Fund being one of them, and the Mine Health and Safety Fund, which we manage on behalf of the Department of Mineral Resources now. Chair, we used to manage funds for the Mineral and Energy Education and Training Institute, which unfortunately folded due to the economic crisis in the past year or two. Chair, we won't talk too much. I think we will touch on some of these associates. The associates are those entities where we own 49% or less of the shareholding. I think we will talk a little bit more about Darling Wind Power. Chair, Johanna Sula is an entity that is actually based in Germany, founded by a professor from the University of Johannesburg, Professor Vivian Albert, who has since moved back to the country. And therefore, we in the process of disposing of our shareholding there. That entity was developing cutting-edge PV technology. And I'll ask Chris, in talking more specifically to the projects, to touch a little more on that. So that Johanna Solar is a relative of Thinfilm Solar Technology. This is now the South African-based entity that is related to the Johanna Solar. And that one is now exploring a different technology in the production of thin-film photovoltaic solar panels, and is based in the Western Cape. So this particular entity, Energy Johannesburg, is a landfill gas project that is based in Johannesburg. We submitted for the second round of the rebid process together with our partners, and were unfortunately unsuccessful. We are now in the process of evaluating the feedback from the department with a view to resubmit, Chair, for the next round. Chair, when we last saw you, we were still in conjunction with the IDC pursuing the Craddock Sugar Beet Biofuels project. We will, Chair, when we come to our financials, demonstrate to you that the group balance sheet is potentially under strain at the moment. It is for that reason that the SAF board has decided to pull out of that project, which we are aware the IDC continues to pursue. Chair, Biotherm is a very small business, and we are partners in a project that captures the waste from the Mossel Bay Petro SA plant to convert it into electricity. That business has been suffering at the moment with the Petro SA feedstock situation. However, there are discussions to resuscitate that business. We invested, Chair, I think around 2008, maybe 2009, in a startup business called Philips Lighting Maseru, which produces compact fluorescent light bulbs in Maseru. Chair, this is in line with our mandate, which looks at the SADC region. So when we last saw you, we also had 49% in Barneto Mining. I believe this may have already moved to African Exploration, which, Chair, you will be aware is in the process of being hyped off in line with the cabinet mandate to hype that business off. Those are the associates. Chair, we'll touch on some of them as we go further into the presentation. We had a number of subsidiaries as well, Chair, when we last saw you. You've already indicated, Chair, that there is a mandate from the Minister that Petro SA and EGAS should be merged. The board is exploring, Chair, but it's not a mandate from the Minister yet, the potential to merge SFF and Oil Pollution Control. Chair, you will recall that Oil Pollution Control provides pollution control services primarily in the Saldanha area. We think there's opportunity to provide them nationally, but the fit between our strategic stock storage business and the oil pollution control business is very strong, so the board is exploring the potential to merge those two businesses. PASA, Chair, you are aware, remains the licensing agency for energy exploration. This is now Saneli, Chair. We're proud to say that we successfully incubated that business to the now Schedule 3 business. Chair, the three smaller entities with the two colors were subsidiaries when we last saw you, but these have since been in the rationalization of the group, been collapsed into what is now called the Clean Energy Division, the EDC, and we'll talk more to the reasons and rationale why. So we did get a mandate from the minister in her budget vote last year, not this past budget vote, to rationalize the group because, as some of the honorable members had already indicated, it had become a spider web of businesses which were difficult to control because of how far we had extended ourselves. And we have listened to this directive, Chair. As a result, as at the beginning of this financial year or the end of the last financial year, the group had been significantly rationalized. Saneri has now become Saneri and is out of the group, even though we continue to collaborate because of the synergies between ourselves and Saneri. I've already talked to the synergies between SFF and OPC. Chair, I've talked to Petroleum SA and EGAS. And I've talked as well, Chair, to the smaller subsidiaries, ETA, CCE, Surf Carbon, and Carbon Stream South Africa, which have been collapsed into the Clean Energy Division. The Clean Energy Division, which used to be called EDC, of course, Chair, includes the solar park and other clean energy projects. Chair, African Exploration, you will be aware, is the mining company that we have been incubating. We now have a cabinet mandate to hive that particular entity off, and we're in the process, in collaboration with our department and the Department of Mineral Resources, to effect that cabinet mandate. Chairperson, we envisage that going forward, you will have a much leaner group, which hopefully will also bring productivity returns in its leanness. And this is what we believe the group could look like by the time we see you in a year or so's time. So I've already talked to this, and it's just to emphasize that the group has been reviewed in terms of its structure and the mandate. We've spent countless hours, both with the board and with management, reviewing our strategic intent. And here what we came up with is not a departure from the SAF Act. It's not a departure from what the minister continues to say to us. It's not a departure from, indeed, what our principals have repeatedly said to us. We've reaffirmed our strategic intent and perhaps reworded it to be to provide the energy resources for national energy security whilst minimizing environmental impacts and in pursuit of government policies. Chair, I hope that in our presentation we'll demonstrate that we have had to pay particular attention to these pillars, which we believe are critical for our success in executing on this mandate. And these include financial and capital allocation, skills. In fact, if you look at the resource and infrastructure assessment, which talks both finance and skills and other resources, our engagement with our key stakeholders, who we've decided need to be stepped up, which is why, Chair, my chairman said, even though we had interviews this morning for the CEO of one of our subsidiaries, the chairperson felt very strongly that it was important that we have a good representation at this meeting. Chair, we are increasing focus on knowledge management and energy R&D, and the structure has also been rationalized for better delivery. Chair, the process has involved quite deep interventions amongst staff, amongst the management team, and together with the board. including, Chair, a detailed review of all the past projects, especially those where we have failed, to pick up the lessons and make sure that we don't make the same mistakes going forward. Chair, the Board has also reiterated that in all we do, we need to be cognizant of the balance between our developmental mandate and our need to be sustainable as an entity. In terms of progress to date, Chair, the high capital requirements of all our projects, be they in the subsidiaries or in SAS itself, have been recognized as a major challenge, and a lot of focus is being paid to that particular challenge because we need to make sure that the group remains sustainable. The interactions between the group and the subsidiaries have therefore been strengthened, Chair, in order to support sustainability. In support of that, a project finance committee now reviews and considers robustly, Chair, all of the subsidiary projects, especially those where the group must provide funding. And Chair, we recognize that we need to enhance our skill base, and therefore urgent action is being taken to attract the requisite staff complement. The Board is aware, Chair, that there are challenges going forward, including the finances, and we'll show you the numbers. The project, Chair, is important. The Board has emphasized that we find sustainable renewable energy projects going forward. We had a solar water heater pilot rollout, Chair, under ETA, which focused on the Ekurhuleni and Nelson Mandela Bay areas. And so we anticipated that that project should have rolled out for the amount of money that the Board set out, 500 high-pressure solar water geysers within a shorter space of time. So we didn't achieve the desired results because it took longer than anticipated, and we ended up rolling out, I think, in the order of 250-258 high-pressure solar water geysers to paying customers, Chair. However, management of that particular project believes that the model has been now been tried and tested, and we should be able to step up the rollout going forward, even in other regions. So we lost a number of senior staff over the year, up to the end of April, including our former CEO, our former CFO. We lost two senior staff members at OPC and SFF, and some other staff. We lost a procurement manager, for example, at SAS. That situation is being addressed by the Board as a matter of urgency. So we've already talked about this balance between developmental and commercial mandates, and we recognize, Chair, that the restructuring as mandated by the Minister will have an impact on the financial health of the group, and therefore the Board continues to engage with the Department and with the Minister to make sure that the holding company is not prejudiced in the restructuring process. So in terms of our performance objective for the past financial year, we unfortunately didn't perform as well as we wished. Chair, we had an objective to reposition the group in terms of the redefined mandate. The mandate is clearer now, but the repositioning process continues. We needed to identify new opportunities. Some of those opportunities, Chair, are still at an early and feasibility stage, and therefore are not mature enough for us to present meaningfully to yourself, nor were they mature enough to present to the Board by the end of the financial year. Chair, we believe the stakeholder engagement issue is an ongoing one, and it continues into the current performance objective. The human capital base is an issue that's becoming more and more urgent for us. And Chair, you will realize when we present our objectives for the current year as well, that the strengthening of the internal processes remains a key focus as well going forward. In terms of the financial statements, shall we've lifted the holding company financial statements only. These are drafts. The Auditor General is still looking through them. We haven't presented to you the consolidated group financial statements, even though we can talk to them broadly. I believe we may have sent in our pack to you, the consolidated financial statements, so we'd be happy to talk to them if you wish. So if you look at the holding company, we're a company that's actually sustained by investment income. We hold cash balances in the order of 3 billion rands at the moment. And the interest income or investment income from those cash balances is what sustains us. A large portion of the operating income is actually fees that we charge to our subsidiaries for services that we provide to them. Our financial manager, GM Finance, says it's actually effectively taking from one pocket and putting in another, because quite a number of these subsidiaries are still funded by ourselves. There are those, however, who have come to and are therefore able to fund these expenses themselves. Here we had finance costs because of some gearing that we had on our balance sheet for some of the projects. In terms of operating costs, this is an anomaly, Chair. The real cost for 2011 was around 101 million rands. However, we had made provision in the prior year because we were facing quite a lot of litigation. And when the litigation didn't come through, we reversed those provisions in this year. So this is an accounting anomaly. Our real cost was around 101 million. So the increase in our operating cost was inflation related. It wasn't way beyond inflation. Project development costs, we do not like this small number because we need to get projects which will sustain the business. So we were inward looking in the past year, which doesn't bode well for the business going forward. I think going forward, you will see in the budget that we've budgeted 168 million rands to conclude feasibility and get some of the projects that we are hoping to get up and running to come on stream. However, Chair, our situation is unsustainable under these circumstances because, as you can see, we made a loss in the past financial year. This is just at holding company level. We made a bigger loss in this past year. So in 2011, 42 million rands, and this year, 61 million rands, 52. Shall we project that it is going to remain that way for maybe another couple of years until we start generating cash from some of the projects that we are looking at? So it's important that in investing in the projects over here, we find low-hanging fruit that will start wiping that negative off, because this just eats into our cash reserve, and the board is not happy to see that situation. However, Chair, it's important to point out that a large portion of this loss is due to the impairment of investments. The impairment, Chair, is partly because some of the projects have actually failed, but also partly because of accounting prudence, where we are required to impair certain investments which haven't started generating income yet. African Exploration, which is in the process of being hived off, accounts for 100 odd million of that 132 that's been impaired. However, that business becomes profitable in the current financial year already from only one of its mines. Sadly, Chair, we may not see the benefit of that investment going forward, depending on the terms under which we hive the business off. Chair, CCE is the George Wood Waste project, which we may have talked to you about previously. This was a wood waste to electricity project that we started working on long before the RESET regulation came on stream. We made a number of mistakes in looking at that project, Chair. We ran ahead of ourselves in terms of procuring the equipment at a very high cost before we had ascertained the availability of feedstock that would sustain that particular project. We believe, Chair, that there may be opportunity to redeem the investment that has gone into that particular or that went into the equipment. We are talking to a number of players, including Sanedi, on how we can make use of that equipment that was procured so that we get the value out of the equipment that was bought there. Chair, SAFCarbon and Carbon Stream South Africa are our carbon businesses that we invested in the order of 17 million rands in. We believe we acquired a lot of expertise in the management of carbon trading, Chair, and that business has now been collapsed into our clean energy division. So even though that we expected that this business would generate revenue for us sooner, we are not regretful of the investment that we've made in the skill space because we believe that there is opportunity going forward. Chair, ITA we've already talked to. This is largely the high-pressure solar water geyser pilot program that accounts for that expenditure. Chair, we've also lifted the financial position of the holding company, the group, so we haven't looked at PetroSA. In terms of profitability, once you put PetroSA into our income statement, we look much better, Chair, because I think our profit is just over R1 billion, or maybe slightly more. But that's largely because of the contribution of PetroSA and SFF, our fuel storage business. Chairperson, this is how our balance sheet looks. The board is, however, very concerned that we cannot afford to deplete those cash resources because in no time then our balance sheet will be half of what it is in terms of our asset base. We therefore in our investment program have to also pay attention that we start generating the value in both in terms of cash flows and in terms of the equity contribution of those investments. Chairperson, I'll now hand over to my colleague.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, this is now moving forward, the year that we are now have now started. The objectives and key performance indicators that we have are essentially twofold. They are making sure that our internal systems and processes are sufficiently agile, flexible, and robust enough for us to move into a new future, and then it is laying down the foundation for that, the actual projects that we're going to look at. The largest contributor to our objectives is the first one, which is to develop a portfolio of projects in the primarily the clean energy and renewable energy space. That is the function of SAFE and the Clean Energy Division. The second one is to ensure that our business processes are robust. And then the last one also ties into that, which is to ensure that we have a long-term plan. The energy sector is not a short-term business. It's a long-term business, and we have to think further than just the year ahead. I always say that if we're going to think about nuclear, we actually have to be thinking about 100 years ahead. And some of you may think that that's crazy, but think about it. If we decide today to build a nuclear power station, we're only likely to see the electricity from that in 15 years' time. The plant is going to be around for 40 to 45 years. That takes us to nearly 60 years. And then you have decommissioning, which is likely to take you another 20 or 30 years. So we're talking a century from now. The energy sector is a long-term game. The oldest oil refinery that we have in South Africa was built in 1954. So that again gives you an idea of the longevity of the investments in energy projects. These are the budget projections for the coming year for SEF, the holding company. Now, I'm not a financial person. It's just numbers to me. I do believe that you have been given the PACs. If you have any specific questions about those numbers, you can ask, and I'll stick my hands up and say, sorry, I'm not the financial person. Okay. This is then the balance sheet on the assets and the liability side. I think I see I briefly touched on that in the previous slide. This just gives you a more detailed overview. Cash flow projections also there now. Okay. No questions. I think now we come to the interesting bits, which is where I'll talk to you about the activities within the group. I think this really is the meat of what you want to know about. I know also that economic development is concerned about jobs and job creation. I cannot come and tell you SEF and the energy sector is going to create millions of jobs. We need to understand the relationship between the energy sector and the rest of the economy. The energy sector is like a lever. The energy sector is not going to create masses of jobs. But without sufficient energy and the necessary energy infrastructure in the country, the rest of the economy is not going to be able to deliver jobs. I think we saw what happened in 2008 when Eskom tried to burn wet coal, and we had some serious economic effects from that. And I'd like you to bear that in mind. The energy sector itself is never going to deliver masses of jobs. But without that infrastructure, the rest of the economy will not be able to provide jobs. Let's have a look at the entities within the group. SEF itself. I know you say it stands for Central Energy Fund, but perhaps we need to change it to Clean Energy Futures. Maybe we need to consider that in our planning, is to change the name. Because clean energy is going to be the future game within the energy structures. And that is where we're working on, with the Clean Energy Division. PetroSA and EGAS are operating in the gas to liquid space, and they're operating oil and gas. SFF is our strategic crude oil supply and also strategic infrastructure. We'll get to the details later. OPC, as has already been mentioned, ties in with SFF and ensures that any vessel that does bring oil into Saldanha Bay has a protective boom encircling it so that any possible oil spill would be contained within a confined area and can be rapidly cleaned up. The Petroleum Agency oversees oil and gas licensing within the country, both offshore and onshore. The very topical subject of shale gas will also fall under them should a decision to go ahead be made. SAFSA, Supply Development Agency, ensuring that we do develop small companies and skills to provide services to the oil sector that have traditionally been supplied often by international consultants and consulting organizations. ITA was looking at solar water heaters. We've spoken about those. And then African Exploration, the state mining company. They primarily into coal, but are also looking at other strategic minerals. You will note that SANEAD is no longer on this list because, strictly speaking, they no longer report through CEF. They report directly to the minister. Where is CEF operational? I pulled this map off Google Earth. CEF head office is in Sandton, and some of the subsidiaries are located there. Out in Mpumalanga, we have essentially two operations. We have African Exploration with one of their mines, and we have old crude oil storage facilities in old abandoned coal mines, and we have to manage that environmental liability. That's SFF, but the operation is managed by OPC, Oil Pollution Control. The big one, PetroSA, has its gas to liquids refinery at Mossel Bay. And then on the West Cape, we have Saldanha, the storage facilities there. We spoke about Darling Wind Power, that is also on the West Coast. And then we have SFF Milnerton. Head office for PetroSA is now split between small office up in Johannesburg and the main operational office down at Paro. I will add to this picture as we go along. Honourable Sinclair will be very happy that I put that red circle up. That is the area that has one of the best solar radiation regimes in the world. And that's an area where we are looking at the solar park, and I suspect where some of the other players in the solar energy game will be operating. Now, I don't claim that that circle is an exact representation, but it is that's the optimal area in the country for solar. Shale gas has been in the news. There are those who are for it, and there are those who are against it. That rectangle delineates the general area where shale gas, we believe, exists. Well, we know that it does exist to some extent, but we actually don't know how much is there. But that is the area that is likely to be impacted. I haven't put the square kilometer array onto this map, but it falls somewhere in this area here. For those of you interested, it's between Carnarvon and Williston, and slightly to the north of that line. That's going to be the central point of that. Let's drill down a little bit. There is Seth House. You can see we've got solar panels on our roof. That's for hot water. It is a new building. It is pretty energy efficient, because energy efficiency is critical if we're going to have any impact on the energy and environmental relationship, and also, in fact, on the economy as well. In 2010, it was the most energy efficient building out of a whole pile that was surveyed by Energy Cybernetics. What we don't have on here yet is photovoltaic panels. The roof we designed so that we can, in fact, load it with PV panels. The companies that are primarily located at CEF House. CEF, we currently have 85 employees, and there is the intention to increase that to 97. So I'm now also talking about both activities, and I'm talking about jobs and job creation. Not much at that level. SASDA, in its supplier development cloak, employs 9 people and is unlikely to see that changing. They have a verification unit, the SASDA Ratings Agency, I think they call it. They're employing 13 people. Whether they will still continue is under debate at the moment. It's possible that that entity may be hived off. We did speak about ITA. We currently have 2 contract employees. The future, I cannot tell you whether they will still be there or whether they will be absorbed into CEF. That's going to depend on some work that's happening over the next few months. That relates to the solar water heating rollout. Let me just take you back. Sanir D will in fact be moving into this new building, which in a month or so they will move across into that building. These are the projects that we have within CEF at the moment. We're busy looking at the solar park feasibility study. That will hopefully be concluded by the end of this year. We are behind schedule because of some challenges that we had with access to the initially identified land. Our carbon and climate change activities, we've budgeted for that. You will notice that it's no longer only carbon. We're also moving into climate change. Some of those climate change activities may be carbon footprinting, for example. We see that as a natural extension of our understanding of carbon and the carbon game. The Vasa and Genja Magogo demonstrations, I'm not sure whether you're aware of what that program entails. It relates to burning coal in a more efficient and less polluting way. Instead of lighting the fire from the bottom, as you would logically think is the best way of doing it, you actually light the fire from the top. And in this way you produce less smoke, and you also use less coal for the heat that you require. It may sound simple, but it's actually the concept is what Sasol uses when they gasify coal. There have been some satellite surveys done, and there is a noticeable decrease in particulate emissions in those areas where we have done extensive demonstrations. Our special projects relate to assisting the Department of Energy with the Integrated Energy Plan and a number of other projects on that side. And then we budgeted 70 million rand for renewable energy projects. That was initially focusing on a photovoltaic project. That doesn't look as though it's going to happen, and so the budget there will be reallocated to other projects as the Clean Energy Division develops new ones. Let's talk about SFF and OPC. SFF's head office is in Milnerton. That's adjacent to the refinery here, a little way to the northeast of us. Their main operations are out of Saldanha Bay, and there they're supported by OPC. We have the facility at Oorgies, which is managed by OPC. SFF fundamentally manages strategic infrastructure and strategic crude oil stock on behalf of the country or the state. This is the Milnerton tank farm. The Chevron refinery is on this side here. We can store, I think it's about 8 million barrels of crude oil should we fill up the 39 tanks that we have there. In terms of staffing, likely to remain fairly constant. There'll be a slight increase over time. The head office function is going to move from 4 to 9. One of these buildings here is actually the head office function. Saldana currently employs 52. They're going to be increasing staff to 60. And the operations of the Milnerton site itself will increase from 20 to 24. They are in the process of refurbishing some of these tanks. These tanks were built in the 1960s, so they are fairly old. You have a rather corrosive atmosphere down in the pit, and there needs to be some maintenance done. Let's move on to Saldana. This block here are the tanks that we have sitting in Saldana. There are six of them. In order to give you an idea of the size, there were something like 60 soccer matches held during the 2010 World Cup. Well, we could have laid out 60 soccer pitches and had all 60 games simultaneously on top of that facility. There's a pipeline from here which comes out onto the jetty right at the end, and that is where the tankers would berth and then pump into those tanks. There is a pipeline from here to the Chevron refinery, and in fact the crude oil that goes through Chevron comes from one of these tanks. So Chevron imports its crude into Saldana and then it's pumped down to Milnerton. I've already given you the SFF staff numbers, so again you can see there are about 60 staff working in SFF at Saldana. OPC, a little different, their Saldana structure is about 25, they will increase to 28. This is an aerial view of the Oorgies facility. This actually is the operations center. There is a new mine opening up to the left, to the west. One of the old containers, in fact, is underneath this area here. The staff complement there would increase to 17. They need, and I think it's an electrician that they need to replace. Currently 15. There are other containers in other areas, and so fairly close by, and they also ensure that no oil residue from the old containers migrates into the water courses and underground water and aquifers in the area. That's their prime function. Let's move on to PetroSA, which now includes EGAS. The head office is in Paro, next to the N1. We have the gas to liquids refinery at Mossel Bay. They do also have international activities. I know that they're talking to oil colleagues in Ghana, and they were operational in Nigeria. The EGAS operations will be included as from the 1st of April. What I haven't shown you on the map, I was trying to find the actual site. EGAS is a 25% shareholder in Romco, which is the pipeline from Mozambique to Secunda, the gas pipeline. In terms of activities happening now and going into the future, the first one is the FO gas field. That's an extension, or it's a new gas field offshore that will be developed. That will provide feedstock to the Mossel Bay facility for a number of years. The investment decision has been made. Project Mutombo is the refinery at Kucha. There's been a lot said about it in the press, and a lot of debate. That is under consideration. And then there is a possible project to import LNG. into the country. LNG, liquid natural gas. You take natural gas and you cool it to -162 degrees Celsius, and it then becomes a liquid. The energy density is 600 times that of the natural gas when it's not under pressure. And then you can ship it around the world. So there is a possibility, that an LNG import facility may be considered. This is PetroSA's Mossel Bay facility. Here, the gas comes in at the bottom, the flares for any excess pressure relief. The main facility here turns the natural gas into a synthetic crude. There's a unit there, if my memory serves me right. And then that synthetic crude is refined into liquid fuels and to chemicals, which are then stored here before being railed or trucked out to the surrounding area. PetroSA employs currently 1,500 odd people. I think you will now start seeing what I meant when I said the oil or the energy industry doesn't create masses of jobs. And this illustrates it quite nicely. They do see, PetroSA does see a slight improvement or increase in the number of job opportunities over the next few years. FO is the new gas field project. Minimal permanent jobs and contract jobs, as you can see, are relatively small. I was not able to clarify the numbers, but I suspect there will be additional jobs when the drilling is done, but that will be done by external specialists. That's a highly specialized game. Project Mutomba would be the refinery. I currently have 21 people working on that. It could go to 100 if they start doing engineering design and if that project does become a reality. But this would be the head office design staff. I'd like to talk a little bit about Port Elizabeth, because that is where Project Mutomba could be sited, and that's why I put the question mark there. It's that area is where we could build the refinery and where potentially an LNG facility could be built. This could become an energy hub for the IDZ at Kuchum. We're now into, perhaps speculation is not the right word, but we're now into a possible future. This is not cast in concrete. This is just to give you a feel for what could happen. And I don't want there to be any misconceptions about that. I do not, if the headlines say SEF is going to do this, then you are misinterpreting what I'm saying. Project Mutomba, in building a refinery, we could typically have between 6,000 and 8,000 construction jobs over 3 or 4 years. But a refinery of that size, if it's new, is only likely to employ about 1,500 people operationally. Similarly, if we build an LNG terminal, it has to be there to energize that part of the country. It has to energize the economic activity there. We believe that probably 1,400 construction jobs at the peak of construction, and construction will take about 4 years. After that, those jobs are no longer there. It's built, it's done. To keep it operating, you only need 70 people. And similarly, should we bring in LNG, it would be prudent to think about the uses of that LNG other than just for providing the thermal energy required by the IDZ. And it would make sense for us to consider putting in a gas turbine power plant, which, again, 2,600 jobs over 3 years at the peak, okay, peak jobs, construction jobs, but then only 130 to run that power station. So I deliberately put this up just to reinforce in your minds that the energy sector is not going to create masses of jobs that are permanent. But if we build an energy hub here, this whole area could generate anywhere between 100,000 jobs. I'm speculating on that. The jobs will come from the industries that require that energy. And I hope that that insight will help you when you are listening to others, talking to others about where we need to go, developing policy, putting plans into place. The Petroleum Agency, they manage licensing for oil and gas exploration in the country, both offshore and onshore. They generate and maintain specific geological information, for example, seismic data on what the subsurface geology looks like, whether there's possibility of us finding gas fields or oil fields. They have been involved in the extended continental shelf claim under the United Nations framework, which is quite important for South Africa. They have done a lot of work on where that continental shelf extension could in fact be delineated. And I'll show you a map of how that looks. Should we go ahead with shale gas exploitation, then PASA will be overseeing the licensing for that. Let's look first at the continental shelf. The red line is the existing continental shelf extension. I think it's 200 nautical miles from the coast. I'm open to correction of it. We have Prince Edward Island, where we have continental shelf, and then the French have an island next to our country. So I did geography a long time ago. But the extended continental shelf claim encompasses the area between this white line and the red line. The red line is ours. Okay, we don't need to quibble about that. But this is a further claim. And then on the west coast is a little bit. And then because this island belongs to us, there is a zone around that as well, which we believe we can have the rights to. This middle line we would be sharing with the French, and in fact that was a combined submission to the United Nations. If we realize that a lot of the future minerals may very well be exploited from the ocean, you will understand the importance of why we actually ensure that this claim does go through. I did show you earlier, shale gas, they currently employ 72 people. If we do major shale gas projects, we will need more people. But how many, we do not know at this stage. This will be purely on the licensing side. And then that is the area where we do believe that shale gas exists. The numbers bandied around 485 trillion cubic feet. That's a resource that has been estimated by the United States Geological Survey. It places us fifth in the world. The resource doesn't mean that we can extract it. There's still a lot of work to be done to determine whether it is feasible, whether in fact that estimate is accurate. Even if it's 10%, 48 TCF, that is a significant amount of gas. The Mossel Bay facility has probably converted 1 TCF into liquid fuels in its 20 years of operation. Let me come to African exploration. They have commenced mining coal at Vlakfontein, which is fairly close to the Wurgis facility that SFF is responsible for. They're also conducting a feasibility study on what is known as a T project. That's a special project using it's coal, but there's one of the seams is a special kind of coal called torbenite, and they're investigating whether it is going to be feasible to exploit that resource. They will also be commencing resource evaluations on a number of other strategic minerals in a number of other areas. This is a satellite image taken at the end of last year, October last year, of the Vlakfontein mine. For those of you who know the area, this is the N12. The N12 running from Johannesburg, south of Joburg, through to Mpumalanga. The Kendall power station is just to the south of this. They're starting to prepare the pit because it's an open cast mine. There you can see the spoils from the first cut, the box cut. They're in a, clearly from a jobs perspective, are in a growth phase. They currently have 23 head office employees. They will be adding a further 14. As you get older, so your memory starts fading. I can't remember whether they will be adding 14 or the 23 is with an additional 14. But ultimately, head office will have 23 staff. The Vlakfontein mine, that's this one, this operation, will increase in 2 years' time from 61 to 151 and then to 200 staff members. The T project, as you can see, is a longer term, and should it go ahead, will also ramp up on jobs. I need to put Darling Wind Power in because we are involved. It is the demonstration wind project just north of Cape Town. It's on a hill near the town of Darling. It is facing challenges, and we are looking at ways of overcoming those challenges. One of them is we don't have the power to fix, and that is that the wind doesn't blow there as hard as we thought it did. And the amount of energy you get out from wind power is a function of the wind speed. There's not much that we can do about that. This again is a satellite image. You can see the four wind turbines. I can't tell you whether they're operating or not, except that because they're pointing in two different directions, either they're confused or two of them are not working when this image was taken. They should all be pointing in the same direction. Can I give you a little anecdote about energy and renewable energy? I don't know whether any of you have visited a coal-fired power station, but South Africa typically builds, they call them six packs in Eskom, a power station with six units. Typically, a unit would be about 600 megawatts. If you look at the footprint of the coal handling facility, and by that I mean coal crushing, the boiler, and the generator set. You're probably covering an area on each unit of about 100 meters by 500 meters. So what's that, 5 hectares, I think, if my maths is still valid. There is a wind farm in Egypt on the shores of the Red Sea at Zafarana. It is the second best wind energy site in the world. It will ultimately have a capacity of 600 megawatts. So in other words, equal to one of the units at one of Eskom's big power stations. It is going to cover an area of 80 square kilometers of desert. Okay. Energy density on renewables is very low compared to that of oil and coal. Can I perhaps give you some other numbers? Those of you who go to gym, I suggest you do this exercise you next go there. Get onto one of those exercise bicycles that will show you what your energy output is in watts. Set it up, it's probably about 5 on some of those Virgin Active gym. And you will be doing about 100 watts. Sounds like a lot. Do that for 1 hour, okay? Not long, 1 hour. You will have generated as much energy as you get out of 2 teaspoons of petrol. 2 teaspoons of petrol. So if you want to know what your labor is worth, petrol costs R11.50 a litre in Gauteng. So your hour's labor on the treadmill or the exercise bicycle is worth 11.5 cents. For 1 litre of petrol, you need to spin for 100 hours. Let's talk about solar and the other renewables. The solar park, the feasibility study is underway. That's all that I can say at this stage. How it's going to pan out, we do not know. Okay? Is the ground suitable? What's the amount of dust that's going to be created, what is the geotech situation, what's the water situation, all of those form part of this feasibility study. In general, this area, we've got Upington up here, we've got Pisgah down here, so there's the Orange River. We've got the square kilometer array somewhere here. Now, I don't see too much of a challenge between those two, because the square kilometer array is in fact going to need some energy, and maybe putting some solar panels up around it would be quite useful. This is a sample of a thin film solar panel. We spoke earlier about Johanna Solar, and we spoke about thin film TFST. This is the kind of panels that would come out of that. So, typical thin form. I suspect, though, that the solar park is going to be a mix of photovoltaic, in other words, generating electricity directly from the sun, and also concentrated solar power, which would be typically a set of mirrors that will direct sun from a large area onto a central point, and then heat up a salt, which would then be used to create steam, to drive a steam turbine. Or it could be a parabolic trough. So instead of a single tower with a whole lot of mirrors, you would have a parabolic trough with a pipe down the middle and the focus, that could be the focal point. It does get hot. Those of you who, in your youth, used to burn ants with magnifying glasses, will know that focusing the sun's rays increases the temperature quite considerably. There is potential for probably 5 gigawatts, that's 5,000 megawatts, of various forms of solar energy within the Northern Cape area. The challenge is going to be getting it out into the grid, because we don't have the transmission network of that capacity. The other challenge is the sun doesn't shine at night. So again, you have an issue with, are you going to store it? In other words, use concentrating solar power and store it, which means that you can then provide electricity in the evening. Or are you going to go for PV, which only works once the sun has risen in the morning, and which then stops producing electricity at night? That is one of the projects we're looking at. We spoke about developmental projects. The Basa Mugenche Magogo is one that we see as trying to make life a little healthier and easier and more efficient for those communities, those people who still have to burn coal. One of the challenges in rural areas is the cost of electrifying, grid electrifying them all. And we need to look at other alternatives. This is a possible option. It's called the Sun King. Made in China, unfortunately. Okay. Which is a little light. It's a torch. What's a reading light? And we want to see whether we can't work together with the local agents to try and distribute these in some form or another to rural communities. In fact, I lent this to our CEO about 2 months ago. The drama that I've had in getting it back is unbelievable, okay? Because I think she lent it to one of her family members and had to probably threaten them with it to get it back, simply to come and demonstrate it to you. So we are thinking about energy poverty and how we can alleviate energy poverty. And this is one way of doing it. You simply put the panel on your roof during the day, plug it into the back of the torch, and then at night you've got light. And if we think about school kids studying at night, they're using candles now. How dangerous is that? Okay. Dangerous. On the bright mode, it gives quite a lot of light. And you can study. They tell me that it has a 4-hour life under that mode. 16 on the little 2, okay, 16 also with a slightly more LEDs, and then 4 hours on that. It will make a difference. It will make a difference. We may not be able to give everybody grid electricity, but we can at least see whether we can alleviate the energy poverty in some areas. And we are looking at that as whether it is going to be feasible or not. The numbers I'm putting up here, sorry, this is Nassau Park. Per gigawatts, the estimate is that there would be 3,400 construction jobs at the peak per gigawatt installed. But the operations and maintenance is only about 230. Can you again see what I was trying to get at about the number of jobs that the energy sector itself can create? Permanent jobs. It's not that high. These are simply numbers to demonstrate this is what we believe could be done with solar power in terms of jobs and job creation at the facility. I think it's time for me to hand back over to our CEO.
Chairperson, I'm pleased that Dr. Cooper was clear when he was presenting scenarios versus when he was presenting reality. Dr. Cooper plays a very strategic role in the group as corporate planner, and this is where we test some of the ideas that we believe we should consider or pursue. Chairperson, in conclusion, We are an organization that is still in the process of restructuring. However, we're excited because, Chair, we believe that we are restructuring for growth. So the challenges that we see in the future are, in our view, not insurmountable, especially with the support of the honorable members and committees such as these. Chairperson, the board, we've already indicated, has chosen to be more robust in interrogating all the projects that we will be embarking on, especially because of the huge capital commitment that is required by those projects and therefore the threat to the group balance sheet. We are seeing some few exciting projects, Chair. I think Dr. Cooper has already presented some of the ideas that are being explored. And because of that, the vacancies that we currently have are being urgently dealt with in order to have the required staff complement for us to deliver on the mandate. So that concludes our presentation for this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO, Dr. Cooper, for the brief presentation. Anything you want to add, Baba? Yes, sure. Okay. Honorable members, it is now your time for engagement with this. The presentation was so clear and good. Honorable Nambi, I see. Honorable Dikhali. Honorable Sinclair. Honorable Gamere. In that order. Honorable Nambi.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation, but hasten to say that maybe in future we have to have more of this engagement, because once we have a detailed, long presentation like this one, we end up not doing justice. It's a very good presentation, but my only worry is that temptation is high that we are not even going to do justice to it. My first question is in relation to the number of people that are leaving the staff. I missed the part of a little bit of elaboration, the reason behind that, so that we can have a better understanding. And when dealing with that, if you can assist us and try to link it to your annual report that was presented for 2011, where you commissioned you requested an investigation about the allegations of irregular appointment of service providers, and now you have the shortage of staff. The second one, it's about the issue that you touch in your conclusion, that the project proposed by subsidiaries and requiring CFF funding would be more robust scrutinized by CFFs, basically for their impact on group sustainability. It's also linked to my first question. How are we going to be able to do this one if ever you have this number of people that have got the particular skill that are leaving you? Then the other one, it's about the slide where you are indicating where you come from, where you can go to that structure. You have E-DOE, another one showing Central Energy Fund. What is the difference so that I can have a better understanding? Because I totally missed the explanation. If you get, I think it's slide number 4, if not number 5, right from the beginning. We can get to, yeah, so that we can have the, yeah, this one, that one. Immediately after, my interpretation of CEF is, and the one that is below, that you show on your left, before you can go to the rest. What is the difference? The other one, it's the role of two departments. Your engagement with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. How often do you meet with that department about some of the services you are providing? And I know that you are dealing with financing and promotion of the acquisition of research and the exploitation of energy-related products. But how often do you also meet the Department of Science and Technology? Then the last part, Chair, maybe if we can have a forum where we can have the board members and INERSA, the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, because if I remember very well, there were a number of issues that were raised by them then, and if we can have both of them in one room, it can enrich our discussion so that we can have a very clear understanding of who's doing what and where are the challenges that we're experiencing. Thanks, Chair, for now.
Thank you, Honorable Nambi. Honorable Dikhali.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would want the doctor to give me clarity on the PE issue, the project Mutambo. Because he said you're not saying it's going to happen. It's like I did not understand. I just wanted to be clear, doctor, because we were there and people were saying they don't want the view to be destroyed, and the others were saying we are hungry, want to have jobs, want this and this. So maybe if you can clarify on that one, I'll be happy. Honorable Nyambi has touched on the issue of the staff, but I want to know the reason for the departure. Yes, we're going to go deeper into it. Again, Session Sima, you know, we have the Department of Forestry, Fishery, and Agriculture. They came up with a plan because provinces like Mpopo and the others, we don't have coastal areas. But then now they came up with the plan of aquaculture. I've been here listening to the presentation, everything is going to Northern Cape, and it's like our provinces have been like not included. So I don't know if ever you don't have a plan of, we have them there. Maybe if they have a plan of helping our people, even if you're not going to create more jobs. But I think something can happen to help them. And the other thing, Sajin Simo, you've talked about the draft statement of comprehensive income where you were talking about the net loss for the year. So I just want to know if ever you have plans to prevent the failure. Thank you very much. Before I go, as he was showing us that touch from China, I once met one other guy who was showing us a paraffin geyser, and it is also from China. Maybe if you can also make a research on that one, it can also help our people in the rural areas. I am from the rural areas. I know they're suffering, and I'll be happy if that can help us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tihali. Honorable Funkle.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, this, the CEF has got a very great and important strategic role and function to play. And I think in that context, it's important to understand some of the dynamics that was raised by the officials here today. because the strategic imperative at the final instance must be to ensure energy supply in the various commodities to make sure that South Africa has got an abundance of that. But Dr. Cooper raised the issue, and it's to some degree very prevalent to this entity. He says the sun does not shine at night. Now that's only a half truth. The sun always shines, but it does not shine when you don't get the benefit of it. Now it's the same anomaly that you get with is the glass half full or half empty. Now, in terms of that context, I think it's necessary to understand that the mandate of this department, or not this department, this entity, is also very strategically inclined. Now, when I raise that, I must also raise my concerns in some of the challenges that's been raised here. What we actually heard here today is not a very nice story, Chairperson, if you can put it so lightly. It's actually a plea, if you like, from the officials to say, we've got the following very, very serious challenges. Now, in terms of that, I want to raise two or three of these issues that can, maybe in the future, be very helpful to make sure that we've got a constant energy supply in South Africa. Now, once again, Chair, you know, we've got the benefit that all the entities and all the departments come to us and plea, actually, in terms of the difficulties that they experience on a daily basis. But the one issue, and it's got nothing to do with the CEF, but it's more in terms of decisions that must be taken by Cabinet, is that there's uncertainty. There's uncertainty if Mtombo is going to be built or not. This department won't make that decision. It's the Cabinet that will make that decision. But certainly there's certain input that can be made to make it worthwhile. Now, it relates back, say, to the very, very important issue about the energy mix that we're going to use in South Africa to survive. Now, can I say, one day when the Honorable President was in our house, I specifically asked him, is energy supply in South Africa under threat? Because it was referred to 2008. And the president denied. He said, no, the energy supply is not under threat. But I think, with due respect to the president, he was not exactly on the point. Maybe he protects his turf and whatever and whatever. But if we don't address the issue about energy supply in South Africa, we're going to have serious, serious, serious challenges in the field that we're playing in the developing world. Now, I want to come then to the specific issues and also speak about the energy mix. There were some round circles which I perceived as very positive, but there were some other square blocks which I perceived very negative. Because I'm also like my colleague here, I'm also from the rural area. I'm from the Karoo. And to the colleagues, know my plea over time. And that is, if we use the energy mix in the correct proportion, then it's not necessary to go for that square block, which unfortunately encapsulates the whole shale gas saga. If we use the energy mixes of the nucleus and the renewables and the coal and so on, with due respect, I don't think it's necessary to engage in that. Sometimes one must take a principled decision to say, this is the way that our country is going to go or not. So I want to propose that the CEF must have a greater voice in terms of putting down the strategic direction of our country's energy. Project Mtombo must be finalized. The uncertainty must be removed, because we can't any longer continue with this old thing. Like the old apartheid government, Chairperson, made a decision to invest in a Sasol. This government, the ANC government, must take a strategic decision to invest in strategic projects. And my understanding and my analysis is that Project Mtombo is one of those.
The second one, Chair, is the one about the solar park in the Northern Cape. I must say, I raised it also in debate with the Minister of Energy. I'm very disappointed. That project is going too slow. There's too many, I mean, even the CEF, Dr. Cooper raised is the issue to say, but he doesn't know why it's going, if I can sort of understand what he said. He said he doesn't know why it's going so slow. That's why we as politicians are here. That's why the cabinet is there, to streamline these processes and to make sure that this whole project, which can create a lot of peripheral opportunities, as indicated, can go forward. So the solar park, I want to see the CEF to have a more stronger drive in this whole thing to make it work at ECU. And can I just as a side remark say that as committee we don't like actors, you know. We don't like acting CEOs. We don't like this. So maybe you must tell us why you're acting. And then, Chair, I want to come to the issue about the exodus of staff. Once again, coming back to my argument about the important nature of this committee. Why is that exodus of staff there? What is the reason? And can I just also then add my voice to the Honourable Member Nyambi from Mpumalanga? You know, it's fine to show us that organigram, if you like. But we're interested in that CEF part. How does your organization look? Because I think if I read your proposal or your presentation right, that in that second blue block, there are serious problems there. How does that organigram look? We want to know what is the problem there, because sometimes the ministers come here and we must raise those issues with them. So the last issue, Chair, then is, I don't know if I heard the acting CEO correctly. She said they were waiting legislation or where you are waiting legal action to take certain decisions. Was it the legislation or legal action that creates a problem in terms of your going forward in some of these activities and so on? I don't know if it's
measure.
Was it the legislation or the legal? Are you involved in legal actions with various entities at the moment?
Chairperson,
you would respond.
I'll respond to that.
So if there's court action at the moment, then what court actions are you involved with? And what is the implication of that pending decision? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Gamera.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start with the issue of acting that we hope it won't lead to Hollywood. I'm not sure, maybe it would have been better if we had someone from the board. Because from management, maybe it will be a challenge to respond on their own. But the issue of acting is a serious concern. At the same time, I want to thank the presentation. By nature of it, it is very technical. And the acting CEO said from the old structure to a new structure, from the spider. What do we call the new structure now? We have moved from the spider. I also want to add my voice on the exodus of senior staff. To me, it's a statement. It's a message. That is why, unfortunately, they are not board members. I think they should be responding to this. It is a very serious statement. You cannot have such an exodus of senior staff. I'm not sure whether we'll get a response. There's another issue of balancing a developmental entity and being commercial. Now I'm checking myself, how do you do this? You know, it's either you're developmental, you've got certain criteria, characteristics, or you're commercial. But you say you want to balance this. How is this really possible? Now, as we're getting the presentation, I'll confess, I became worried. But then the doctor confessed that energy doesn't take you. But you use a lot of money. Now, the question is, are we back to the chocolate growth? Are we back to the chocolate growth? Because if you're growing, you have this type of energy and that type of energy, you're growing, but there are no jobs that have been created. You know, this one, I'll just put it as it is, you know. I put it with the Department of Energy. Why should people in the rural areas always get their wealth? Be it a solar torch, be it a paraffin geyser, be it a gel stove, why at this day and age? We pay same taxes. When we go to vote, we all vote. But when we are to deliver, when we think of the rural people, we think of the solar torch, not of the real energy. That's me. When are we going to change this mindset? Shift and actually, you know, I say this in this community all the time. They say infrastructure is very costly when you go to rural areas, blah, 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 and all that. But come election time, we go to these rural areas, and it's not costly. And that's what people say. When are we going to get real energy for rural areas? Fortunately, we all come from rural areas. Now, if I stay in the urban areas, I'll have electricity. And my father and my grandmother in the rural areas will have a torch. And I'll continue telling them, please vote, vote, vote. When are we going to change this? We need to take a decision. Budgets to backlogs, in other words. Your budget, is it talking to the backlogs that we have in the country to address the imbalances? Your budget, is it talking to the priorities of government? I see it is failing on job creation. What are other priorities? Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Kamere. The solar water heater project rollout, if you can just give us an indication, because on our oversight, we engage with the provinces and we go to the provinces, as we are in terms of the constitution, presenting provincial interest into the national sphere of government. between the two provinces that you mentioned, Eastern Cape, I think the other one was in Gauteng. How much is in each one of them? And what was the envisaged total to install? And what was the target? And how far have you reached, or how far off are you from the target in those two areas, in NMD, Nelson Mandela Bay, as well as in Gauteng? The other one, and also, on the solar water heater rollout, I know that economic development or IDC has donated funds or rollout funds. Now, I want to find out if SIF got any, has SIF received any of these funds from IDC in terms of the solar water heater? If not, are there any discussions in terms of that? Regarding that, with the IDC, because it's part of the new growth path document that has been set out. Also, your big projects which has failed, those that have failed, what impact has it got on the economy? What impact has it got on the service delivery to the nation? What impact has it got in terms of your mandate as CEF? You say that my colleague from the Northern Cape has talked a lot about it, but there's a worrying fact in terms of the new SKA that's going up. What impact will it have on it? Because rightly as, I think Honorable Sinclair has mentioned, that SKA will also start using power when it gets operation. I think Honorable Sinclair, doctor mentioned it. It's gonna use power. Will the shale gas is that start building? Do you think the two can walk simultaneously on the path? Or will the one affect the other one? Or will the one have a less impact on the parameter shown on the landscape? Will it have a negative impact, the drilling for shale gas? And what impact will it have on this SKA areas? The Basa Njengo Magogo demonstration or project, is it the same one that the Deputy Minister of Environmental Affairs has come up with? And and the Darling Wheat Farm, Doctor, after you've everybody was bragging about the Darling Wheat Farm, we in the Western Cape thrilled about the Darling Wheat Farm. We even said to the people in Gauteng and Free State and some parts of Mpumalanga and Limpopo that you haven't got wind as we've got in the Western Cape. That's why we've got a wind farm. You can't put up a wind farm. Now you have just burst our bubble in that regard. Do you think that it's in a strategic place, Darling? Because as far as I know, Darling, from the Western Cape, Darling hasn't got much wind. Should we shift it? Maybe down to further south, where there is the southeastern starts, where there is wind, where we will get much more benefit from such a wind farm. CEO and Doctor, over to you.
Jefferson, thank you very much. The Hollywood actor should start before we get to Dr. Cooper. Chair, just to explain my position, I am I was non-executive director of SAF until the board requested that I hold the acting position for a short while. There is currently a process to search for a CEO. The adverts were out, I think, last month, and that process is being run in parallel with the other positions that were opened up in order to fill them up as speedily as possible. The board is as uncomfortable, Chair, as the honorable members are about the situation that we're in, because it's a source of instability, unnecessary instability for the organization. So your input is acknowledged, Chair. If I may start with the Honorable Nyambi's questions, and I won't answer all of them, but we'll leave some of them to my colleagues here. Chairperson, let's start with the issue of staff departures, senior staff departures. We're an organization that has enjoyed a very low level of staff turnover, and that remains. Chairperson, the reason we believe it's important for us to disclose to you that we've lost some senior staff members is because of the seniority of the positions that were affected. Specifically, Chair, we're talking about the CEO of OPC, who has left the organization after a period of over 20 years with the organization. Indication that he gave to his directors was that he was going to pursue other interests, and indeed he is now in another energy entity, as I am informed. We also talking, Chair, about tank rental manager for SFF, who was looking after the commercial tank rental side of the SFF business. This is a gentleman who we acquired from PetroSA, so he had been with the group also for a while. He also went to pursue other interests, and I'm informed that he and our former CEO of OPC have joined the same organization, which is in the energy space. Over here, which is where Honorable Nyanzi is concerned about, and I think Honorable Sinclair, we have lost the CEO in September last year, Mr. Damane, and in April this year, we lost the CFO. These are senior positions, Chair, which is why it's important for us to disclose to yourself. The CFO went to join another organization. She indicated it was in an unrelated industry. The CFO, Chair, is a young chartered accountant who the organization would have loved to keep. However, I think in the stress of both the reorganization and the loss of the CEO and the fact that she was asked to act as CEO following the departure of the CEO, she was, it seems, under so much pressure that we couldn't even convince her to stay. The chairperson of the group, Dr. Sankim Thembi Mahanyele, has said that we will go back and ask those people that we believe we would like to have back in the group to come back, Chair, once the organization is stabilized. And I believe that could be one of the individuals that the group would like to have back. Chairperson, the CEO of SEF, Mr. Damane, had been with the group for around 6 years when he left in September last year. As the Honorable Nyambi indicated, this was precipitated by board investigations. In this business, Chair, which was supposed to be based in George, where we went and acquired equipment ahead of confirming whether we have feedstock or not, and therefore expended a considerable amount of money, the board was baffled by the approach that we took in executing that project, and therefore decided to investigate if there was any impropriety in those acquisitions. Check. I'm grateful that in terms of the equipment itself that was acquired, nothing was found to have been untoward. However, there were serious enough for the board to lay charges. There were decisions that were taken without involving the board, and yet were at the level of the board decisions. And therefore, disciplinary inquiries were instituted, and this was around the same time that we lost the former CEO. So those inquiries were never concluded. Chairperson, I'll come back to the issues of SEF because it seems there was a lot of concern around that. Chair, the departments that we should be dealing with, I think the Honourable Member has indicated very correctly, Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism and Department of Science and Technology, Forestry and Fisheries. Our interaction, Chair, with the various departments are at best weak, which is why one of our objectives is to strengthen interactions with key stakeholders. We've realized that that's an area of weakness, and therefore we haven't been able to leverage the relationship with government to the best of our interests. So, Chair, my colleagues may have something specific and different to say, but at this point, my view is strongly that our interactions are very weak. We do collaborate with the Deputy Minister of Environmental Affairs on the Basanjango-Makoko project, which, Chair, I'm proud to say was initiated by our former Minister of Minerals and Energy, Minister Hendricks, via a, was it Minister Hendricks? I think, via a directive. And the Minister Sanjeev, apologies. And the Minister of Environmental Affairs has graciously joined us in those campaigns, Chair, much to our benefit. Chair, I would agree that it would be very beneficial to both the SAF board and I believe to NASA for a joint session with yourself. Chairperson, in terms of the draft statement of comprehensive income, if I may just point out, Chair, that the situation is not looking positive for us in the near future. That is a correct assessment. And this is just looking at that blue block that Honorable Sinclair referred to. We are supported mainly by income from the cash balances. That's an unsustainable way of living. And we realize that, which is why we are pushing very hard on getting projects that will generate income for ourselves. However, Chair, our staff members and colleagues now live with the fear that we incubate projects, and those that are successfully incubated are then spun out from the group before the group benefits. So that discussion needs to also be had in order to balance the needs of the group so that we can more effectively incubate other businesses going forward. Chair, if I may just indicate that one of the key objectives or projects that we are currently investigating or the mandate that we have from the board is to investigate the potential for manufacturing opportunities in the country. And this is in recognition of the reality that we become reliant on China, and we need to balance the benefit of the lower prices versus the job creation opportunities that manufacturing would bring to the country, as opposed to the direct energy electricity generation projects, which don't have as much of a job impact. Therefore, we've got a very strong mandate from the board to investigate manufacturing, clean energy equipment manufacturing opportunities. Chairperson, I will not talk to the energy mix issue raised by Honorable Sinclair, because Chris Cooper, from his position as corporate planner, is at the moment directly involved on SAF's behalf in the department's endeavors in that regard. So I'll allow Chris to address that matter. Without a doubt, we've been very slow on the solar park project. And it's of concern to ourselves. Part of the challenge was the security of tenure. So a piece of land was identified and perhaps very unfortunately announced. And before we knew it, we didn't have that piece of land available to us anymore. So we have had to move around that region that Chris was indicating on the map to find suitable land where we can have unquestionable security of tenure in order for us to press on the project. However, we have to press on the pedal with speed going forward. Chair, litigation, what I indicated, I think what the Honourable Member was referring to, was that in 2009-10, we made a significant provision because there was a claim by I don't even think the person was contracted. It was a potential service provider who was going to assist us on the solar water geyser rollout project, and they had a large potential claim against us. We had a potential claim from one of our, the Surf Carbon staff members who departed, and there may have been other smaller ones. These were the largest ones. So a provision was made in the 2009-10 financial year, and because this litigation didn't come to fruition, these had to be reversed. And therefore, our expenses here look anomalous because 29 million rands is not realistic if you compare it with 2012 and the budget for 2013. So our actual expense is 101 million for this particular year. But it's because we reversed a provision. In terms of current litigation, Chair, the former CEO approached the High Court in Southern Gauteng, claiming that because he had made a protected disclosure, the board had then instituted disciplinary proceedings against him. And that particular case was ruled in the company's favor. He has then gone on to appeal, and he's been granted leave to appeal. So that particular case is still ongoing. Chairperson, otherwise, I am not aware of any other significant litigation that is on our books. And Chris will add if I am wrong in that regard. Chairperson, the way we manage the balance between developmental and commercial mandates is by splitting our budget between developmental projects and commercial projects. It may not be the best way to manage CHED because, as the Honourable Member has indicated, it's either you focus on one or the other. However, Chair, I think we have managed that balance delicately and successfully to date, and the mandate we've therefore been given to continue doing so going forward. Chairperson, I'll allow Chris to address the issue of jobless growth and his pronouncement at this meeting that energy sector cannot provide so many jobs. I, however, believe that energy is the enabler to the economy, and therefore there are ancillary jobs that come when you provide energy resources. Chairperson, I'll also ask Chris to deal with the question of energy, in dealing with the issue of energy mix, also address the question of why we seem to be discriminating against rural areas by providing other sources of energy. And if necessary, I will add thereafter. Chairperson, our solar water heating program has focused on the high-pressure geysers rather than the low-pressure geysers, which are being funded by the Department of Economic Development and the IDC. So we are focusing on the consumers such as yourself and ourselves who can pay for these units, rather than the people who cannot afford to pay. And Chairperson, our intention, I think, when we initiated the pilot program was that within a year we would have rolled out, we would have, or even few, even shorter period, we would have put 250 geysers in Ekurhuleni, and 250 was the target for Nelson Mandela Bay. In terms of what we achieved, in my recollection, we installed in the region of 158 in Ekurhuleni.
Chair, we installed nearly 250 in Nelson Mandela Bay, and it was perhaps 12 or 13 in Ekurhuleni.
Correct. My apologies. We were more successful in Nelson Mandela Bay than we were in Ekurhuleni. And the challenge here was that our finance model was to try and recover the money via the municipal bills, because we were targeting individuals who cannot put the 20,000 rands all up front in one day, but rather people who would be happy to, from their savings from the electricity charge for the geysers, pay us 300 rands a month, let's say. So it was important that we get agreements with the municipalities in order to recover the monies. And I think we were more successful earlier in Nelson Mandela Bay than we were in Ekurhuleni. By the time we were successful in Ekurhuleni, the board called on us to stop the project because they wanted us to evaluate before rolling out more aggressively. Chairperson,
just on that, even if the president has made a, because this committee was invited, I think it was last year or the year before, to the launch of the presidential launch of the 1 million rollout. And there it was told that it's free. Am I correct? It's free. The 1 million was free. Now, I hear now you say that people have to, must pay for that. But we were invited to a launch where it was free. We even took site visits. We even took site visits to the Eastern Cape. Unfortunately, the NMB municipality, the mayor was not able to meet with us there. But we've seen as we drove to the Kuha Park in Uitenhage, we've seen the solar water heater instruments on the roofs there. But why do people have to pay when it was a rollout presidential campaign and a ministerial campaign, Department of Energy, when it was free, supposed to be free? Is this part of the 1 million or was this a separate project?
The SAS project is definitely a separate project to augment the department's initiative. And here the rationale is that there is a part of the population that may not need to be subsidized with those geysers. And out of the, how many households do we have? About, I don't know how many millions of households we have, but I believe that the million geysers that are being rolled out will probably address about 20%, 25% of the households in the country. I don't know. It could be less, Chair. Therefore, we are augmenting the department's initiatives in that regard. Chairperson, in terms of the largest project that has failed in our books, and we're now looking at that blue block, CES, the holding company, in the recent past, it would be CCE. This is the George Wood Waste project, where we have to date spent around 90 million rands procuring equipment and paying for rental of space, without actually realizing the project. We do have the equipment on hand still, Chair, and as indicated earlier, we are trying to at least get the equipment used. So in terms of the recent past, Chatterson, that's the largest project that I would consider a failure. But I'll allow Dr. Cooper to talk to any others that we should bring to your attention.
Just a follow-up on that. Sorry that I... but this Jodh wood waste project, is it part of the Jodh forest project? What was the community involvement in that project? A large community, settlements, Lavaikam, what do they call that, Tembaletu, Pakotor, you know, Blanco, it's quite a large community involvement.
Chairperson, we were, in my knowledge and Chris's knowledge, I've just checked with him now, very short in terms of community development. What we were looking or hoping for at the time was that the Working for Water program, which was going to remove the alien species in the area, would provide us with feedstock. However, as indicated earlier, Chair, our approach was back to front. So we ran ahead with the procurement of equipment and other things before engaging with, you know, providers of feedstock and the communities, which I think was probably one of the reasons for where we are at the moment. So that was short, Chair.
Sorry, CEO. But is it too late, or can it still be safe? Because, you see, that area is very well known for its, which they call, what is stinkwood, eh? Stinkwood. Yellow wood and what is stinkwood and stinkwood? Yeah. Stinkwood and geelwood. Because they make beautiful furniture out of that, and strong furniture, everlasting furniture. You know, so can this project still be saved? Can this project still be viable, as you said, goes and says, but communities, we will do the training for you and all that to help save this project for the communities.
Chairperson, you would be aware that SANEDI is involved in the Working for Water and Working for Energy program for the two departments. We are in engagement with SANEDI on revisiting feasibility studies and testing whether that project would be viable still in that area. I think that's one of the areas that they are considering. The alternative that they are considering is slightly further north towards the Mpumalanga area, but that's one of the areas that they are considering and that we will conduct a feasibility study on. Chairperson, I'll allow Chris Cooper to go through the other questions.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I hope that I get all of the questions that you have asked and that we don't miss any. Project Mutombo is a significant project. We're looking probably at about 100 billion rand. So it is a large project. SEF does not have the resources. PetroSA does not have the resources to do it on its own. It will also require that we do have clarity on clean fuel specifications, because that will determine the configuration of that refinery. So there are policy issues that need to be resolved before a final decision can be taken on Project Mutombo.
In terms of the specific answer, I read somewhere in the recent past, last 2 weeks, that there was some strategic agreement structured with a Chinese government parastatal called Sinopec. Now, that says that there is some movement. So what is that arrangement, and what is the CEF's involvement as a strategic partner to that whole process?
Sir, thank you. I'm not in a position to answer that, because they would have been Petro SA. They would have been working on that themselves. If I'm allowed to speculate, probably not. No, I'm not allowed to speculate on that. Yeah, right. I'm just looking at these other. So I'm not sure whether that really answers your question on Project Matomba. But it's going to need a higher level decision than just SEF or Petro SA or SEF on that. The energy mix, yeah, that's critical. South Africa is very reliant on coal, which is a significant component of our current energy mix. And we do need to move to a better balanced energy mix. That will be addressed during the integrated energy plan process, which is currently started by the Department of Energy. There is a technical task team made up from industry players, and I'm also involved with that in helping to guide them on what that should look like. I think that will answer a lot of the questions about how much energy we are going to require and what the different mix options are going to be. That ties in, I guess, with the other question relating to solar versus shale gas. If we do have a shale gas resource, we are going to have the robust debate about whether we need that source to be utilized here to power our economy. I spoke about jobs. I spoke about that the energy sector itself does not on its own provide the jobs or many jobs, but without energy you have got no jobs. I could probably go into a fairly lengthy discourse about energy and its relationship to the universe, to humankind, and to the economy that we have created. That might distract you a little. Without energy, we do not exist. Okay. And that energy for us as biological beings is food. We then become a little more advanced and we create our economies. And all of the transactions in that economy require energy. But it is not the energy sector that is doing those transactions. It's merely providing the mechanism for that transaction. So the jobs come in the rest of the economy, not in the energy sector.
Thank you. You see, Chair, that it's one of the fundamental issues in this whole debate. Firstly, the energy mix is not playing off shale gas against solar. It's one of five or six components of that whole mix. The point that I raised was to say if we use this energy mix wisely in the interest of all these deliverables that you raised, then there's different options to look. And then I exclude the shale gas. But the point that the Dr. Cooper, with due respect, is missing, like some of the other people that's promoting, if you like, the shale gas, is that energy is not the world's scarcest resource. It's water. And the big debate in this block that you've identified in the Karoo is water. Now, if we've got a developmental agenda, then we can look at the broader context about how do we address the specific needs of people in that part of the world.
Yeah, I think that there's a discussion that needs to be taken offline here. I'm quite prepared to take that discussion offline, and I'll make myself available. If you don't have energy, you can't pump water.
We will. In actual fact, we will in our next term or after that, after the report of the expert has come out,
We will then get the people to come and brief the committee. She'll give about the five components or six components that Albus and Clash mentioned, and we will invite you for that discussion. But you may continue with the other question.
Okay, the next one that I have got is the economy and jobless growth and the relation, the energy component. It's quite possible that we're going to have jobless no growth. Okay. Again, it's part of a broader understanding of where we're heading. How do you define a job? How do you define growth? Can growth continue forever on a planet that is not expanding? And those are philosophical discussions that mainstream economists, am I allowed to also say, and politicians, and also many scientists do not understand. Okay. There are limits that we have hit, and that's going to impact. We can have aspirations of a 6% growth rate. If we do not have the energy and the other resources, water, to support that, you're not going to see that growth. If we have sufficient energy supplies, then the rest of the economy should be able to grow and create jobs. If we don't have the energy supply, then we clearly have seen that economic activity comes to a standstill. You probably find that 5% of people employed are within the energy sector. 95% are employed outside of the sector. So you can use that ratio to say, if I have an energy project, ultimately that will employ 5% of the total number of people that will be employed as a result of the outputs from this project. I hope that clears that in your mind. Rural energy poverty. Yeah. It's an economic challenge, probably more than a technological challenge. And that is the cost of actually getting commercial energy into remote areas where the demand for energy is relatively low compared to the demand by the rest of the economy. The Honourable Sinclair, if he lives in the Karoo, will know what it costs to get Eskom to bring power to a farm, a significant amount. It's cheaper to buy solar panels and batteries and put them on your property than it does for you to get Eskom to put a power line in. Okay. Maybe we should ask the powers that be to remove shale gas from our country, and then we wouldn't have to worry about that debate. But it is a resource that's there. It's not going to go away until it's been assessed and until all of the implications have been thoroughly debated and understood. That elephant is not going to leave the room. Okay. I'm not saying that I'm for or I'm against shale gas. I have not said that. I have not said I'm for or against nuclear. We actually have to look at all options. And if you and I want to carry on living the lifestyle that we currently enjoy, we are going to have to find the energy sources to allow us to live that lifestyle. If we're prepared to accept a lower energetic lifestyle, then it may be possible to leave shale gas under the Karoo rather than on top of the Karoo. There is no easy answer to rural energy poverty alleviation. Some of the solutions may appear to be less acceptable. So, for example, the solar candle may appear to be less acceptable. Maybe at some time in the not too far distant future, even the people of Santa may have to put solar panels onto the roof of their house. For example, I have solar water heaters. at home. I use LP gas to cook with. I'm moving to not only CFLs but to LED lighting so that I reduce my electricity demand. Okay. These is one form of LED, light emitting diodes. We are going to have to change. We may not like the changes because we have developed a blinker mentality of growth forever and increase in standard of living as we understand it, which is GDP. That may have to change. That's philosophical discussion, which unfortunately is too often swept away. Yeah, I'm lucky I'm being
bothered. I would like to please address the very unsustainable situation at the moment where we see the import of finished fuel product being imported into the country. So we are actually importing beneficiated product into the country at a cost. And in light of the questions about Mtombo and Sinopec, I should confirm, Chairperson, that PetroSA did sign an agreement with Sinopec to jointly study the feasibility of and potential configuration of Mtombo once it comes through. However, that decision is neither CEF nor PetroSA. However, what we see currently in the market is totally unsustainable, and I'd like quickly to address that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we currently import well over 1 billion litres, primarily of diesel, because of the product mix into the country. Our refineries were originally configured to produce more petrol than diesel. Okay. In the last 15 years, we've seen a swing in motor cars more to diesel. Remember that in the old days, diesel was trucks, cars was petrol. That has now changed. The refineries are old. While there have been upgrades to them, their optimal mix is still loaded towards petrol rather than diesel, which means with an increased diesel demand that we have to import diesel because we cannot produce it here ourselves. Yes, there is a significant outflow of foreign exchange. We are going to have to look at the entire refining sector, what their capacities are, what their flexibilities are, what their efficiencies are, and it may very well make sense then to build Project Mtombo locally. You have to then also look at what is the international market looking like for the excess product that you're going to produce. And can we build a large refinery and operate it, exporting product, and then keep it running at a profit? It is a significant investment. But yes, it will reduce our foreign exchange outflows on finished product. Okay, I've got one last question. Why doesn't the wind blow at Darling? I don't know. I'm not from the Western Cape. I do know where Darling is. The decision to put those four turbines on that particular hill was taken perhaps 10 years ago, before my time at CEF. Can we move them? I guess you can, but it'll cost a lot of money to move them. Are there other areas in the Western Cape where the wind does blow sufficiently? I'm sure there are. In fact, there's recently been a wind atlas that has been produced, which will hopefully identify better areas. Does the wind blow on the top of Table Mountain? Would we like to put turbines there? Which again is the question that we have to find a balance with what we do and where we do it. I hope that I've answered all of the questions that you have.
Chair, if I may just conclude on Darling Wind Power, we do have a study that was commissioned, I think, by the shareholders and the DBSA as the major funder, which suggests that even though the performance is at what they call P30, so we're not even getting the wind blowing 50% of the time, if we were able to get a better tariff than we're currently getting, and if we planted a few more turbines on that farm, we would be past the break-even line very quickly, Chair, at current electricity prices.
Hello, I think to put up wind turbines in Table Mountain, we have trouble, Doctor. South Africa will be too small for you. Even the world will be too small for you. It quite baffles, because I would have thought that people that knows or the study that would have been done would have shown that you would have solar panels would have been much more usable in Darling than wind turbines, because I mean there's more sun in Darling than there's wind. Members, any follow-up questions?
That's one. Security of supply diesel. Do we have, besides that you have said, would like to have raw products and actually do more here, but as we talk, because I remember at one stage we were dealing with the Department of Energy and they raised this issue. Now, specifically on diesel, do we have a security of supply? And what is Plan B?
Couple on that, security of LPG, you know, there was a big, big fight in terms of the LPG last year, or this year, even this year also. Jobs have been lost, economy was touched, businesses had to close down. Even now, in terms of bitumen, what do we call these people? Engineers, construction engineers, civil engineers, people doing the roads, they say they can't even do proper roads. They can't even fix up potholes because there's no bitumen. Those type of things, dampening jobs, dampening the economy. Honorable Nguni, then Honorable Dihali. And
thanks, Chair. Just three quick ones. The first one, Chairperson, is that the CEO, was he implicated in the investigation in the disciplinary action? Two, the threaded club statement of comprehensive income is not similar to what we have in our presentation, of which in our presentation it shows up to the end of March 2012. Can we be informed from the drafts in our textbooks that, our presentation, there's a 64% times increase on projects and funding of other projects in the statement. And then the last one, Chairperson, what role does the SUCO play in the supply of oil, or in exploration of oil? If the question is relevant, if not, the Department of Energy or any other resource.
Mine is not a question. Chairperson, I just want to forward my word of just want to say thank you to Doctor for the straightforward questions and method.
Can you hold that? Let's
continue,
Chairperson. Do a vote of thanks for us. But you are so good in doing that.
Oh, okay. No, I also wanted to say, you see, Ekurhuleni is not far from Limpopo. Whatever you do in Ekurhuleni before you finish, must have got to Limpopo and supply those people with the service. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah. Can the CF
Nambi?
Yes, very good. Can CF maybe provide us with a status report in terms of their
misconceptions regarding the solar power. Because it's been indicated it's a massive project. Yeah, then Chair, linked to your issue about the secure supply, last year when we had that urgent public hearings regarding that matter, the one message that came out like a golden thread, or rather a golden threat, a challenge, was the whole issue about storage capacity. And I think it was referred to in the slide about the potential about how much storage capacity South Africa has. But at the moment, we don't utilize it. So I think part of the bone of contention in the whole argument about Project Ntombo is the whole issue about, is it feasible, or must we rather use the storage capacity of South Africa to bring in crude oil and use our refineries to the best effect?
Leo, Doctor, you've got basically 10 minutes.
Chairperson, I'll take one of those. Is the investigation that was conducted on the CCE project found that there were certain approvals that should have been taken to the board before certain aspects before certain things were executed. So that was the issue that the board took the view that they needed to institute disciplinary inquiries on. However, in terms of the project itself, there was no untoward issues that were found in the project itself. So the required approvals had not been obtained as they should have. Chairperson, the income statement, we did indicate that the one that was included in the PEC is the income statement of the group. We, however, opted this morning to show you the picture of the holding company, so the blue block that was at the top, by on its own, without the impact of PetroSA and SFF, which are currently the highest contributors to the profit in the income statement that you have in your PEC. However, if you wish for us to go through that, we can do so.
Chair, security of supply?
Yeah.
When you're using a finite resource that is depleting, you actually have no security of supply. It cannot be guaranteed. We do our best to provide, but I don't know that we can guarantee it. I don't think any company can guarantee that, and the same applies to LPG. The issue with bitumen simply is that the crude oil is being processed to produce more white products, petrol and diesel, than bitumen, so there's less bitumen available. Why? Because there's a better price on the white products and there's more demand for the white products. The net available crude oil for export globally has decreased from 40 million barrels a day in 2005 to 35 million barrels in 2010. We are reliant on that for our imports of crude oil. And if that's decreasing, there's no security of supply. So I cannot give you a guarantee, and if anybody does give you a guarantee, question all. Snake oil fails. Okay. Sukor no longer exists. It has been absorbed into PASA and PetroSA. They each do some of the activities that were done by Sukor. Okay. Solar park. I really don't know where we're going to go with that. Okay. Clearly, we're doing the work, and once the feasibility study is completed, then we will know what the options are. However, it also needs to fit into the planned production from solar, as set out by the Department of Energy in the Integrated Resource Plan, which will also be included in the Integrated Energy Plan. Storage capacity, I'm not sure exactly what you meant by storage capacity. I'm assuming you meant related to crude oil. Yes, we have the facilities at Saldanha, the Millerton facilities. Those are the two facilities where we can store crude oil for strategic purposes.
Okay.
Is it sufficient? Well, we need to define what sufficient is. How many days worth of crude do we wish to keep? And where are we going to get the funds from to procure that crude? A single VLCC, very large crude carrier, carries about 2 million barrels. So multiply 2 million barrels by $100 by 8 rand, whatever, and you'll know how many billions of rands is in one ship. 2 million barrels is about 4 days' supply into our current refineries. I hope that does answer the questions that were posed.
My remark about the solar park was, if you can submit a written report on the CEF's perception about the solar park and where we stand at the moment, that was, and just maybe the 2 billion that the government now committed to the IMF, you know, they can take that and buy some strategic oil. That's not enough, the doctor says. Honorable Nguni, you aren't two questions been answered? Okay. Doctor, the CEO, acting CEO, any outstanding issues in that, please revert back to us in writing. If there is any. Let me hand over to Honorable Dikhali to do what she does best of all of us here in this group.
Okay, Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity and thank you as a Chairperson for directing this program so well, and you've been respecting each and every member who is in this house. And to Session C, my team, CEO, and the doctor, and their colleagues, let me just say we are happy for the presentation and the manner in which you were answering the questions. But there's something that touched me, Doctor. The solar candle. You see, to me, it looks decent, and the sun is free. We don't have to pay for the sun. And I believe everybody in Limpopo will be happy to use it because most of them are poor and they are not working. So I'm really waiting for that. Thank you very much, and as you go back, be blessed. Thanks, Chairperson.
The doctor can give the candle as a present to you. CEO, doctor, your colleague, any fun for the road shot from you?
Chairperson, from my side, I'd just like to thank the honorable members. This is also a learning opportunity for us, and I'm grateful for the time that you've given us. But I'll allow you to also.
I just thank you for listening. And I guess all that I can say is please have an open mind.